what you have. To someone, it may be better than you dare to think. That, as you may know, is a quote from American poet Mr. Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. You may remember his poem, The Song of Hiawatha. By the shore of Gitche-Gumee, by the shining big sea water, at the doorway of his wigwam, in the pleasant summer morning, Hiawatha stood and waited. Oh, I digress. I forget sometimes that I'm not addressing my class of pupils. Let me tell you instead about the jar. It was an icy day in February 1871, and I noticed that some of the pupils in my class were coming to school freezing and damp. Their fingers blue with the cold. Despite the furnace, my classroom was as cold inside as it was outside. Sarah, take off that wet shawl and go and sit by the furnace. Oh, we're nearly out of coal. Arthur, please take this coal scuttle and fetch some more coal from Mr. Scott's office. Don't forget to knock and mind your manners. Tommy, go to the pump and take a little water for that cough. Stand up, class. We will sing a rousing chorus of Ride On in Majesty to get warm, and you may stamp your feet like little donkeys to remember the donkey upon whom Jesus rode into Jerusalem. Ride on in majesty, hear all the tribes Hosanna cry.
Miss Griffin, may I have a word?
Of course, Mr. Scott.
I have to inform you that the school is having some issues with government funding being delayed. Mr. Gladstone's government may have been eager to introduce education for all, but not so eager to ensure that the necessary financial remuneration arrives in a timely manner.
What does that mean?
It means we have run out of coal. You may return to your singing.
That very night, I went to the coal merchant and paid, from my own wages, for a sack of coal to be delivered to the school. The following day, we were warm. But I noticed some of the children brought a dry, stale heel of bread and were drinking water from the village pump. I bought a pound of cheese from the grocer and begged a local farmer for a dozen eggs, which I hard-boiled. I divided it among those I judged to be the poorest children and slipped it into their desks. I hoped the children wouldn't inform their parents. I also searched my linen chest for spare shawls, comforters and blankets. It wasn't right that our children were living in such poverty. On my way home, I stopped at St. Michael's, the parish church. Good afternoon, Father Patrick. I hope I am not disturbing you.
Ah, not at all, Miss Griffin. How may I help?
I explained the situation, and Father Patrick agreed it was monstrously unfair.
If I could set up a little fund for the poor children in the parish... Yes. I can do it. It's Lent, and the parishioners' thoughts turn to charity. When do you need the money?
Why, now. This very minute. There are children going cold and hungry as we speak.
Oh, a tall order, Miss Griffin, a tall order. Give me till Monday, and I will have a jar of money on your desk in your classroom before you arrive.
And he was as good as his word. On Monday, there was a large stone jar on my desk, full of money. 17 shillings and threepence farthing in total. I could do so much with that. Repair boots, buy nourishing food, pay for Tommy to see a doctor about that cough.
Miss Griffin, what do you have there?
Mr. Scott, you startled me. I did not hear you come in. How may I help you?
That money, where did it come from? Is it yours?
Yes. No. I can explain. I did not have time to concoct a story, and I would not tell a lie. so I told Mr. Scott the truth.
Excellent. I'll take that. We can use it towards coal and having the window in my office mended. A terrible draught blowing through and playing havoc with my sciatica. Be sure to thank Father Patrick for his most generous donation to the school.
Deflated, I had no choice but to return to Father Patrick that evening and explain everything.
You're back again, Miss Griffin. By the look on your face, I think you're not here to thank me.
The tears I had been fighting all day fell copiously as I explained what had happened and told the priest of my predicament. That money was for the children, Father Patrick, not to mend windows.
We will formulate a plan to circumvent Mr. Scott's schemes and ensure the money is spent on the children. Now, I will collect some money again this week, and I'll leave it hidden in my sacristy, where you, and only you, may collect it. And to show the money has been honestly spent, I would ask that you provide receipts for your purchases.
I agreed happily. The system Father Patrick and I cooked up worked well, with me using the money for food, soap, clothing and boots, writing implements and story and reading books. I said nothing, and nor did the children. It seemed like the most public secret around the village. The postmaster winked at me. The baker added loaves of fresh bread to my order. And in the autumn, I found a barrel of apples under my desk.
Miss Griffin, I cannot help but notice that the children in your class are blossoming.
Thank you, Mr. Scott. Indeed they are. Tommy's cough has gone, and there have been fewer children off school ill this year.
They are taller, look happier, appear healthier, and are achieving above their expected ages compared with the previous years. What is happening? What are you doing to these children?
I am teaching them, nurturing them, and caring for them. It's called education, Mr. Scott. I'm surprised I need to explain.
Something underhand is going on. Mark my words, I will find you out.
Instead of being delighted at the consequences of my excellent pedagogy and the villagers' philanthropy, he was exceedingly suspicious. He questioned the priest, and in no uncertain terms accused him of favouritism and creating division. He accused me of underhandedness and ordered it to stop immediately on pain of my dismissal without a reference. This put me in a difficult position, but I felt I had no choice. I was doing good. The people at the parish church were doing good, and the children were benefiting. I could not stop, and nor could Father Patrick. In fact, the secret benevolent fund became known, not only outside the walls of St. Michael's, the farmers, the public house, the manor house, but outside the parish boundaries. And donations came from the next village and even the town. A donation of £20 was rumoured to have come from the mayor himself.
I took to hiding the money in a different secret place in the church every week after I found Mr. Scott in the sacristy after benediction, rummaging through the vestments. I put it where only she and I knew where it was and sent her a note each week to let her know its location.
This continued all that academic year and the next year and benefited both the baby class and my class in the school. And Mr. Scott never found out how. A few months later, I was dismissed suddenly and callously for some made-up indiscretion and had to find work in the office of a factory. Father Patrick moved on from St. Michael's. I heard that Mr. Scott had died after a fall on his stairs. I did not attend his funeral.
The long and the short of it is that I am older now, and I cannot collect the money or help the children like I did for that glorious year at that school. I donate a portion of my wages to Dr. Barnardo's Homes for Children, Mr. Dickens' Home for Homeless Women, and St. Vincent de Paul. But I can no longer collect money myself and ensure its distribution to the poor and needy children in the villages and towns, the country, and who knows, across the world. I don't buy cheese and eggs and boots and books anymore. Maybe a day will come when children no longer live in poverty and they no longer need our help. Until then, will you help them for me? Will you? Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast from Radio Maria. If you enjoy these programs, please consider becoming one of our monthly donors. All you need to do is visit www.radiomariaengland.uk and click on the Support Us tab for various options. We rely entirely on donations, so thank you to all our listeners who support us.